You know, don't get me wrong. I am one entertained son of a bitch. I got other talents, you know. Yeah, but I bet all your really good tricks are back at your apartment, right? And you'd be happy to show them to me if only I were 16 and female. Do you dream, man? I interpret dreams for beer. That's the town of Undisclosed in a nutshell. This run-down half-city with more weirdos per capita than you'll find anywhere outside of San Francisco. We should have that printed on the green population sign coming into town. Welcome to Undisclosed, dreams interpreted for beer. I said, well, I don't have any beer, so I guess I'm out of luck.
I'll tell you what, Mr. Skeptic Man. I'll do it just like Daniel in the Old Testament. I'll tell you the last dream you had, then I'll break down its meaning for you. But if I'm right, you gotta buy me a beer. Okay, Mon?
Sure. I mean, you've obviously been blessed with supernatural gifts. What better way to use them than to fish for free beers at parties? I craned my head around and thought I saw the dog trotting around a tent where somebody was selling corn dogs. I told my feet to turn and walk after it. I commanded my mouth to tell this guy never mind. Neither responded. I knew that absolutely nothing good could possibly come from this encounter, and somehow that a whole lot of bad could come instead. But my feet were planted.
You had a dream early this morning in the middle of the thunderstorm.
I looked him in the eye. Lucky guess.
In the dream, you were back with your girl, Tina.
Whoa. How do you know?
And you come home, and she's there with a big honkin' pile of dynamite. One of those big cartoon plunger detonators ready to blow. You ask her what she's doing, and she says, this, and shoves down the handle, and...
He spread his hands in the air.
Boom. Your eyes snapped open. The explosion in your dream became the clap of thunder outside your window. So tell me, Mon, am I close?
Holy she. It. He smiled. All eyes were on me, the naked shock on my face. A girl whispered, oh my God. There is no feeling I hate as much as speechlessness in the face of another man. I mumbled something. One of the girls muttered, was he right? He was right, wasn't he? A raven-haired girl next to her wearing raccoon eyeshadow suddenly looked like she had been drained by a vampire. The group had unconsciously taken a step or two backward, as if there was some kind of safe distance at which the world would start making sense again.
The look on his face tells me I was right, he said through a grin. Wouldn't you say, girls? But wait, there's more.
I wanted to walk away. Up on the pallet stage behind me, John was tearing away at the solo that marks the end of Camel Holocaust, rapping some impromptu lyrics. All over the cacophonous drums of Head, the entire show is one big drum solo in my mind, Feingold, and the band's thunderous triple-threat bass. I've been to a lot of concerts, everything from garage bands to Pearl Jam. Maybe my opinion is biased, but I would have to say that Three Arms Sally is the shittiest band I've ever heard.
You can guess the meaning of the dream, Mon. The girl laying in wait for you, ready to wreck your world again. But the dream be trying to tell you something else, too. The dream be trying to warn you, giving you a demonstration.
Okay, 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 I said, holding up my hands. You made a lucky guess somebody probably told you about.
You see, you gotta be brave to ask yourself the scary questions. How did your mind, David, know the thunder was coming?
Thunder? What? Get away from this guy, man. Get away, get away. What? You're full of...
The thunder came right as she hit the detonator in your dream. Your mind started the dream 30 seconds before the thunderclap. How did it know the thunder would be coming at that moment to coincide with the explosion at the end?
Because it's a poor sort of memory that only works backward, I thought crazily. Holy shit, I'm quoting Alice in Wonderland. This is the worst fucking party ever. I don't know, I don't know. This is bullshit. I was looking everywhere but at the Jamaican, suddenly terrified that I'd see him floating a foot off the grass. The girls were tittering to each other in amazement, a story to tell in the hallways Monday. Screw them, screw everybody. But the bastard just wouldn't stop talking.
We've all had those dreams, man. You dream you're on a game show, on TV wearing nothing but a jockstrap. At the exact moment, the game show buzzer goes off to tell you you've lost. The telephone buzzes in real life. A call your mind couldn't have known was coming. You see, time is an ocean, not a garden hose. Space is a puff of smoke, a wisp of cloud. Your mind is a whatever. Whatever. I turned away, shaking my head, my mouth dry. Walk away. Walk away. This ain't right. You know it. You want no part of this guy. On stage, John was now crooning the slow, mournful dirge that was Gay Superman. The camel of despair soars, strapped to his jetpack of haunted memories. "Want me to tell you where your daddy really was when you were in the hospital with that broken leg?" he said to my back. This stopped me, my guts turning to ice again. "Want to tell me the name of your soulmate, or how she'll die?" "Stop, or I'll tell you how you'll die." That's what I wanted to say, but didn't. I walked away, forcing the steps. It was that jarring sensation of unreality, like the first time you see the road go spinning around your windshield in the middle of a car crash. I was actually dizzy, unsteady on my feet. "Do you want to know when the first nuclear bomb will go off on American soil? And which city?" I almost launched myself at the guy. But once again, a probable trip to the hospital was avoided by physical cowardice. This guy could probably kick my ass, even without magical powers. I was so wired at this point, I had the insane urge to punch one of those girls instead. Probably lose that fight, too. "You know what, Mon? Why don't you take your fake Jamaican accent and get back on the boat to fake Jamaica?" is another thing it would have been cool to say, had I thought of it. Instead, I sort of mumbled and made a dismissive motion with my hand as I stumbled into the crowd, acting like the conversation failed to hold my interest.
"Hey!" he shouted after me. "You owe me a beer, Mon. Hey!"
Gypsies and psychics and tarot readers have 100 generations of practice at their art. And practice is all it is. Cold reading, wishful thinking, deductive reasoning. Throw out some general statement that could apply to any person on this earth. "I'm sensing that something is troubling you." "You're amazing. Yes, it's my husband." And the mark tells you the rest. But the fake Jamaican had no way of knowing what he knew. No possible way. I watched my shoes mash through the weeds. This man had just ruptured the thin fabric of all I believed to be. I walked right into a girl, broadsided her, felled her like a tree. I saw, to my horror, that it was Jennifer Lopez. You know how to tell if you've been single too long? When you help a girl to her feet and get a rush of excitement for the 2 seconds you hold her hand on the way up. "Geez, sorry," I said as Jennifer picked up her beer bottle. I was walking away from a, you know, voodoo thing, flying voodoo man. She was in denim shorts and a tank top, hair in a ponytail. I guess I should point out that this was not the famous Jennifer Lopez, but rather a local girl I was fond of who happened to have that same name. I guess it would have made a better story if it had turned out to be the singer-actress. And if you want a picture of J-Lo whenever I mention this girl, feel free, even though my Jennifer only looked like the famous one when she was walking away from you. She worked as a cashier at Home Depot these days, and I made it a point to show up in her lane, buying the manliest items in the store. In my apartment I now had an axe, 3 bags of cement mix, and 3 different crowbars. On the last visit, I bought a 10-pound sledgehammer and, looking disappointed, asked her if they had a bigger one. She didn't answer, not even to count back my change. As she brushed glass clippings off her butt, I felt the intense urge to reach over and help her. I managed to restrain myself. Holy crap, there is no mood-changing substance on Earth like testosterone. "I'm really, really sorry. You okay?" "Yeah, spilled my Zima a little, but what are you doing here?" "Just, you know, party." She gestured vaguely with her hand at the crowd and music. "Well, good seeing you."
"She's walking away. Say something."
I'm here with a band," I said, following her while using the most casual non-following stride I had in my walking repertoire. She glanced up at the band, then back at me.
"You know they started playing without you, right?"
"No, I don't like play an instrument or anything. I'm just, well, you saw me at the beginning there. I was the guy that fell down and died."
"Well, I just got here." She walked a little faster. She's getting away. Tackle her.
Well, I said after her, I'll see you round. She didn't answer, and I watched her walk away, intently. She met up with some blonde kid in droopy pants, a sideways ball cap, and a band t-shirt. The whole sequence depressed me so much I didn't think about the floating Jamaican again until... 3 hours later, John and the crew were packing their scratched equipment into a white van with the words Fat Jackson's Flap Wagon spray-painted on the side. That was the name of the band before they changed it a few months ago.
Dave, said John, look, can you believe how much sweat I have on this shirt?
That's something, I said.
We're all meeting at the One Ball. You coming?
That's the One Ball Inn, a bar downtown. Don't ask.
No, I said. I gotta go to work in 7 hours.
John had work, too. We both worked the same shift at the same video store. John had been through 6 jobs in 3 years, by the way. Some girl came up behind John and put her arms around him. I didn't recognize her, but that was normal.
Yeah, me too, he admitted. But I gotta buy Robert a beer first.
Who? The black guy? John gestured toward a group of 5 people, 3 girls and 2 dudes with their backs to me. One was a huge guy with red hair. Next to him was the rainbow beret and dreadlocks of my voodoo priest.
See him? He's the one in the white tennis shoes.
Not only did I see him, but he turned toward me. He made eye contact and shouted, "You owe me a beer, Mon."
"The man likes his beer," said John.
"Hey, I heard there was somebody from a record company out there tonight."
"I don't like the guy, John. There's something not right about him."
"You like so few people, Dave. He's cool. He bet me a beer he could guess my weight. Got it on the first try. Amazing stuff.
Do you even know how much you weigh?"
"Not exactly, but he couldn't have been off by more than a few pounds."
"Okay, first of all, never mind. John, the guy does an accent. What kind of a person goes around like that? He's phony. Also, I think he might be, into something. Come on."
"Into something? You are so quick to judge. Have you thought that maybe he was raised by his father, who was a fugitive from the law, and that to conceal his identity, his father had to fake an accent, and that maybe young Robert learned how to talk from his dad and thus adopted that same fake accent?
Is that what he told you?"
"No."
"Come on, John, my car is behind the trees back there. Come with me."
"Are you going to the One Ball?"
"No, obviously not."
"Then I'm riding with Head in the flap wagon. You're still welcome to come if you want."
I declined.
They loaded up and left. I felt a little abandoned. There wasn't anybody else I really knew there, so I wandered about for a bit, hoping to run into Jennifer Lopez, or at least that dog. I did find Jennifer, where she was sitting in a cherry red 65 Mustang making out with that blonde kid. He looked barely old enough to drive. This made me furious for some reason, and I sulked my way back to my underfed Japanese economy car, shoes kicking up little sprays of moisture from the tall grass as I went. The dog was waiting for me, right there by my door, like it couldn't understand what had taken me so long. I unlocked the door, and Molly leapt into the passenger seat. I gawked, half expecting the dog to reach around with her teeth and pull down the seatbelt. She didn't, just waited. I flung myself down into the little Hyundai, feeling like 1,000 questions were squirming around my gut. I dug into my pocket for my car keys. I pulled my hand out and screamed. Not a full-fledged female victim in a slasher movie scream, just a harsh, rasping, "Wah!" On the palm of my hand, etched into the skin, was the phrase, "You owe me one beer." I sat there in the dark, staring at my hand. I did this for several minutes, felt my stomach clench, then decided to lean out of the door and vomit in the weeds. I spat and opened my eyes, saw movement in the puddle, something long and black and wriggling. So that's where the centipede went. I squeezed my eyes shut and leaned back in my seat. In that moment, I decided to go home and crawl into bed and pretend that none of this had ever, ever happened. Telling the story now, I'm tempted to say something like, who would have thought that John would help bring about the end of the world? I won't say that, though, because most of us who grew up with John thought he would help end the world somehow. Once in chemistry class, John accidentally made a Bunsen burner explode.
I mean, it actually shattered a window. He got suspended for 10 days for that, and if they could have proven it wasn't an accident, he'd have been expelled, as I was, a year later. He was kicked out of art class for submitting very, very detailed charcoal nudes of himself, only with about 6 inches added to his genitalia. He broke his wrist after a fall while trying to ride a friend's van like a surfboard. He has burn scars on the back of his thighs from what he told me was a mishap with homemade fireworks, but what I believe was the result of his and some friend's attempt to make a jetpack. He told me a year ago he wanted to go into politics someday, even though he didn't even have 1 minute of college. A month ago, he told me he wanted to go into the adult film industry instead. Chapter 2. The Thing in John's Apartment. Darkness and warmth. And then, an all-beep rendition of La Cucaracha. My cell phone. I peeled my eyes open. Bedroom. Nighttime. My floor looked like a laundromat explosion. Magazines here and there, overflowing trash can. Just as I had left it. Beep, 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 beep. My hand managed to knock over every single object on my nightstand before it found the cell phone. I squinted at my clock, now lying helpless on the floor. 5:15 a.m. I had to be at work in less than 2 hours. Hello? David. It's John. Where are you? Voice scratchy, breathing heavier than he should be, like a man just after a fist fight. I'm in bed. Where am I supposed to be? Long pause. Is this the first time I've called tonight? I sat straight up, fully awake now. John, what's going on?
I can't get out of my apartment, Dave.
What?
I'm scared, man. I mean it.
What are you scared of?
It can't be real, Dave. It can't. The way it moves, the way it's made. This is not a product of any kind of evolution or anything. It's not real. No. But it still managed to bite me.
What? What? Can you come over? One time, John wound up in the hospital after he blacked out behind the wheel of his car. He wasn't moving at the time, thank God, but was in line at a Wendy's drive-thru. This was after 5 sleepless and foodless days of vodka and some combination of household chemicals he was using for speed. I didn't know about it until a week later because he didn't tell me, knowing I would have kicked his ass right there in the hospital. But I told him if he ever got into that kind of trouble again without telling me, I would not only kick his ass, but would in fact beat him until he died, then pursue him into the afterlife and beat his eternal soul. So John being spaced out on crank or crack or skank tonight wasn't reason to declare a national holiday, but at least he came to me this time. I said, I'll be there in 12 minutes. I hung up, pulled on some clothes I found draped over a chair, almost killed myself, tripping over Molly the dog curled up in the doorway. I went out the front door with the dog in tow. It was raining again now, fat drops of April ice water that tinkled down the back of my shirt as I ducked into my car. I was halfway to his building when my phone sang again. John's number popped up on the glowing display. Yeah, John, you okay?
Dave, I'm sorry to wake you up. I got a problem and I need you to listen.
John, I'm on my way over. You called me 5 minutes ago, remember?
What?
No. David, stay away. There's something in here with me. I can't explain it. I don't think it'll kill me. It just seems to want to keep me here. Now, I need you to go to Las Vegas. Contact a man named...
John, just calm down. You're not making sense. I want you to sit down somewhere. Try to chill out. Nothing you're seeing is real.
A pause. Then John asked,
How do I know this is really you?
You'll know in just a few minutes. I'm coming up on your block now. Just chill, like I said.
John?
Nobody there. I sped up, rain drumming the windshield and boiling up into puddles on the passing pavement. I was pounding on the door to John's apartment 7 minutes later, still pounding on it 5 minutes after that. I considered going down and waking up his landlord when I tried the knob and realized the door had been unlocked the whole time. It was dark. No use looking for a switch. John's only light was a floor lamp across the room, and far be it from John to do something as rational as putting the light source where you could reach it from the door. Memory told me at least 2 pieces of furniture and probably 20 empty beer bottles stood between me and the lamp.
John?
Nothing. I tried a tentative step into his apartment. my shoe kicking over a stack of magazines. I tried to step over them, cracked something glass or porcelain on the other side. John, can you hear me? I'm going to call the oomph. I was hammered by either a flying body tackle or an unnecessarily aggressive hug. My assailant and I landed hard on the carpet, pounding the breath from my lungs.
It almost killed you, John screamed, inches from my face. You're an idiot. You know that? You're an idiot for coming here. We're both going to die now. You could have brought help, but now we're both going to die in this room.
He sat up off me, and in the darkness I could detect his head whipping back and forth, as if searching for a sniper. He put one finger up to my face.
Shh. I don't see it. When I say go, we're going to the other side of the room as fast as physically possible. You can clear it in 3 steps, dive at the end. Move like the devil himself were after you. Ready?
John, listen to me. I paused, forced air into my lungs, and tried to think.
You can't miss any more days at work. If you let me take you to the hospital, we'll tell them you've been poisoned or something. I don't think they'll go to the cops. We can get a note from the doctor there. If we've got a note, I could talk Jeff into keeping you on.
Go! John pushed himself to his feet, sprinted across the room, and flung himself over an overturned sofa next to the wall. He sailed over it, arms flopping about like a rag doll, smacking into the wall behind it with a heavy thud. I calmly stood up, walked to my right, and turned up the floor lamp. I looked over to see John peer over the overturned sofa. Next to it was an armchair, on the other side a capsized coffee table. The man had built a furniture fort on that side of the room.
John.
He stood up, eyes wide. He put his hands out to me, fingers splayed.
Dave, do not move.
He spoke flat, low, and dead serious.
What?
I'm begging you, he said, almost whispering now.
I know you don't believe me, but when you turn around, you will. But do not scream. If you do, you're dead. Now very slowly turn around.
Very slowly, as asked, I turned. For a split second, I was sure I would see something. I felt the hairs stand up on the back of my neck as if swept by a puff of warm breath. There was nothing there. I sighed, pissed at myself for getting sucked into this. I faced John again, my raised eyebrows telling him I saw nothing more threatening than a very large and very naked poster of what appeared to be a female professional wrestler.
No, it moved, he said.
There. He pointed to the corner near the ceiling. Very slowly, I turned and craned my neck, eyes following his pointed finger to the spot on the wall he so desperately needed me to see. Still nothing. John, you can either come with me to the hospital or I'm calling an ambulance, but what I'm not going to do is...
The door! Go!
John hurdled the sofa, then ran and threw himself through the open door. I stood watching as he tumbled onto the carpet and then smoothly unfolded into a dead run down the hall outside. I faintly heard him thump through the stairwell doors, shouting victoriously. I sighed. I looked around his apartment. I found and pocketed his keys, then poked around some more and found his jacket on his bed. I grabbed for it, then yanked my hand back in pain. Something jabbed my finger, left a dot of blood on it. I reached into the jacket's front pocket. A syringe. It was one of those cheap disposable ones they sell to diabetics. There was residue inside, and it was fucking black. Like used motor oil. I broke off the needle in the trash and stuck the rest of the syringe in my pants pocket. I had never done this before, and I didn't know if a doctor would need it or not to examine the contents. If not, I was going to shove it up John's ass. I rooted around in his pockets for vials or pipes or anything else that would indicate what he had in his system. All I found was an empty pack of Chesterfields and a wadded-up FedEx receipt for something he sent to a Nevada address. I stopped myself before I drifted into the area of what would be called snooping and locked up the apartment behind me. I went down and found John pacing back and forth in the parking lot, rain pelting him, fists clenched, ready for the dark god Cthulhu himself to come flopping out at the first-level doors. I tossed him his jacket, told him to get in my car. He opened the door and froze in fear.
What? I barked. What is it now?
John was staring at Molly like she was the fluffy devil incarnate.
John?
Nothing.
When did the dog find you?
You know this dog? It's been following me around like a lost, dog.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Let's go before something else follows us.
He glanced up at the apartment building. I ducked into the car, but didn't start it. John glanced up at the building once more, said,
"Just tell me you could see it. At least that."
I didn't see it. Tell me what this is. I held up the syringe. John rubbed his eyes, a man exhausted.
You don't want to touch that.
What time is it?
Just past 5 in the morning.
What day? Friday night. I mean, Saturday morning. It feels like Friday night because I barely slept yet. And we got work today, remember?
You shouldn't have come here.
You called me. You begged me. John leaned back, closed his eyes. For a second I thought he had dozed off. Finally he mumbled,
I did? When?
Tell me what this stuff is, John. They're going to ask me first thing. Tell me before you fall asleep.
I remember now. Calling you. It's hard. Everything's running together.
I called and called and called, like a shotgun firing in every direction, hoping to hit something.
I bet I called you 20 times.
Twice. You called me twice. John, answer my question.
Really? You kept getting weird on me. You know what I think? I think you'll be getting calls from me for the next 8 or 9 years. All from tonight. I couldn't help it. Couldn't get oriented. Kept slipping out of the time. You got a voicemail message 3 years from now that's freaking hilarious.
I jammed the syringe back into my pocket and started the car. John reached over, grabbed my wrist. His eyes were open and alarmed.
Wait, where are we going to go?
Where are we going to be safe from this thing? Emergency room, John. I'm not playing this game with you. I don't know what else to do, and I don't know how we're going to pay for it. You're on a bad trip, or whatever they call it. Maybe it's a big deal. Maybe it's not. Maybe you can just sleep shit like this off. I don't know, because I'm not a junkie, and I'm not a doctor.
No. The hospital's no good. We'll go to your place. Or somewhere. Anywhere but here.
I can't make myself recount the rest of this conversation. I'm too ashamed of it. The long and short of it is that I let John talk me out of taking him to get treatment. That I worried more about him liking me than about whether he lived or died. That on that night, at that moment, I was the lowest, most selfish, worthless coward who ever lived. So where was there to go? We were both scared for different reasons. He needed safety, and I needed some kind of familiar comfort. I'm not sure how he decided on Denny's, but that's where we wound up. Well-lit, familiar, full of people. We sat in a booth and downed cup after cup of coffee in silence, John smoking his cigarettes and sneaking furtive glances out the window. Me counting the seconds that passed without any psychotic ravings. I convinced myself with every passing peaceful moment that things were getting better, that the worst was over. In that, I was pants-shittingly wrong. Well, I asked, how you doing? Any better?
I saw things tonight, both before and after I...
He trailed off, sucked on his cigarette instead. Okay, I said, back up. You don't know the name of the drug?
Robert called it soy sauce, but I'm thinking now that was just a nickname and that it wasn't, you know, actual soy sauce.
Robert?
Oh, of course, Robert, the fake magical Jamaican from the party. I would be finding Robert, I decided. I would be having a word with him.
Robert, I asked. What's his last name?
Marley, of course.
That's the only name he gave you?
Yeah, I didn't want to pry.
And he gave you the... My cell phone chirped. I ignored it. Who could possibly be calling at this hour? Tina, crying, wanting us to get back together a sixth time because she's at home and lonely? Jennifer Lopez deciding she was wrong to have brushed me off at the party and wanting to play a game of hide the cocktail wiener?
Yes, he did, answered John. We were drunk in the one ball parking lot after close. We were passing around a joint. Head and Nate Wilkes crushed up some kind of pills between spoons and snorted it. There was other stuff. Anyway, we drank some more. Beep, 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 beep. And then the Jamaican guy pulls out the sauce. It be opening doors to other worlds, Mon, he says. We made him do it first, saw that he didn't die. Seemed to make him pretty happy, and then Dave, the guy, I know I didn't really see this, but the guy shrunk himself, made himself 3 feet tall. We all laughed our asses off, and then he was back to normal again. And you still tried that shit? Are you kidding? How could I not?
The phone sang its electronic ditty again. Did anybody else do it?
Are you gonna get that?
You avoid my question one more time, and I will come over this table and punch you in the face. Look into my eyes. You know I mean it. I'm tired of your...
It's not that easy, Dave. Everything's mixed up, like if somebody made you watch 10 movies at once and then made you write an essay on them. That stuff, Dave, I'm remembering things that haven't happened yet. I mean, that didn't happen. Even right now, all that stuff from Vegas. Did we go to Las Vegas, you and me?
The phone chirped a third time, or fourth, I lost count.
No, John, we've never been in our lives, either one of us. Are you the only one who took the sauce?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to say. We went to Robert's place, but Head and the guys didn't come. I think they got nervous when they saw a needle come out. There were some kids around, and the party kind of landed there at Robert's trailer. Now please, 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 get your phone and turn it off. The damn song you got in there is driving me up a wall.
Wait, wait, wait. You took something that scared Head?
The guy who did the stuff that killed River Phoenix just to prove he was the better man?
Dave.
All right, all right. I pulled out the phone, flipped it open, slapped it to my head. Yeah.
David, it's me.
Ah, that feeling again. That chill of unreality, my belly full of coffee turning to liquid nitrogen. The voice was John's. No question about it. The man who was sitting across from me, smoking quietly, without a phone anywhere near his head, had called me. I glanced at John, said into the phone, "Is this a recording?"
"What?"
"No. I don't know if we've talked tonight, but we don't have much time. I think I called you and told you to come here. If so, don't do it. If I haven't called, then obviously you should still stay away regardless. Now, I need you to go to Las Vegas. There's a guy there. Who is this?"
John, in the booth there with me, gave me a look.
On the phone.
"It's John. Can you hear me?"
"I can hear you, and I can see you," I said, a tremble in my voice. "You're sitting right here next to me."
"Well, just talk to me in person then. Oh, wait. Do I look like I'm injured in any way?"
"What?"
"Fuck! Someone's at the door."
Click. He was gone. I sat there, the phone still pressed to my ear, suddenly very, very tired. If I had been sitting with anyone else, I would have assumed I was being set up for some drunken practical joke. But I knew this wasn't some elaborate prank of John's for 2 reasons. One, John knows how I get when I'm pissed off and wouldn't intentionally do it. And two, it wasn't funny. I was scared. Truly scared. Maybe for the first time since I was a little kid. John looked pale and half dead. My feet were wet and cold, my contact lenses were itching, my brain aching from sleep deprivation. I wanted to burn that cell phone, go home and lock my doors and curl up under a blanket in the closet. This is the breaking point in a human life, right here. But my whole life had been leading up to this, hadn't it? From day one, it was like society was this violent, complicated dance, and everybody had taken lessons but me. Knocked to the floor, again and again, climbing to my feet each time, bloody and humiliated. Always met with disapproving faces, waiting for me to leave so I'd stop fucking up the party. They wanted to push me outside, where the freaks huddled in the cold. Out there with the misfits, the broken, glazed eye types who can only watch as the normals enjoy their shiny new cars and careers and marriages and vacations with the kids. The freaks spend their lives shambling around, wondering how they got left out, mumbling about conspiracy theories and Bigfoot sightings. Their encounters with the world are marked by awkward conversations and stifled laughter, hidden smirks and rolled eyes, and worst of all, pity. Sitting there on that night in April, I pictured myself getting shoved out there with them, the sound of doors locking behind me. "Welcome to Freakdom, Dave. It'll be time to start a website soon, where you'll type out everything in one huge paragraph." It was like dying.
"Was that me?"
asked John.
"That was me, wasn't it?"
I looked down at my coffee and considered flinging it into John's face.
"I'm sorry, Dave, I really am, for messing up your sleep cycle and for everything that's about to happen, the people that are going to, explode.
I was already up, walking out. I guess John paid at the counter behind me, I don't know. I pushed my way out the glass door, dug out my keys. I opened the driver's door, and Molly the dog immediately flung herself out onto the pavement, barking her head off, looking right at me. Then she trotted off across the empty lot, turned, and barked some more, then trotted a few steps farther and barked again.
John says, "I think she wants us to follow her."
She scampered off down the sidewalk, glancing back at us to make sure we were coming. I slid into the car. I pulled out of the space and drove in completely the opposite direction of the dog. John seemed like he wanted to comment on this, but the look on my face probably warned him off. I vaguely heard the sound of the dog running and barking after us as I turned onto the street, but disregarded it. We drove in tense silence. Finally, tentatively, he asked where we were going. "We're going to fucking work, John. It's 6 o'clock and we're opening the shop. There's nobody there to cover for us." He didn't reply to this. Instead, he leaned his seat back, turned and looked out the passenger window at the passing storefronts and the few early morning joggers, not saying a word. I eventually asked him how he was doing, got no answer. I could see he was still breathing, that was good. Sleeping, that's all. I guess that was good, too. "If he gets sick and dies, Robert Marley, they're going to find you in a ditch somewhere." I stopped at a red light, feeling foolish as always for stopping at an intersection at an hour when the streets are deserted, just because a colored light bulb told me to. Society has got me so fucking trained. I rubbed my eyes and groaned and felt utterly alone in the world. Thump. Scratching on the window, like claws. I flinched, turned. It was claws. Molly's. She was on her hind legs, her paws pressed against the window. Woof. Go away. Woof. Shut up. Woof. Hey, I said shut up. Get your feet off my car. Woof, woof, woof. Shut up, shut up, shut up. This went on for longer than I care to admit, and it ended with me getting out and leaning my seat forward so Molly could jump into the back. Yes, the entire spiraling trajectory my life took since that night was because I lost a debate with a dog. She sniffed around John and then barked at me, the sound deafening in the enclosed space. Still, John didn't stir. "What do you want?" That seemed like a perfectly reasonable question at that moment. The dog clearly had intentions somehow and wasn't going to leave me alone until I acted on them. "What? Do you think I'm your master? Did little Timmy fall down the fucking well? What do you—"
I stopped, my eye drawn to her jingling collar and the little metal tag there.
"I'm Molly. Please return me to—"
She stopped barking.
The place was way the hell out of town, out near the big drain cleaner factory. At one point I took a right turn and Molly went into a barking fit. I did a U-turn and she immediately calmed down. I saw a big, run-down Victorian house standing off by itself at the end of the block, and realized the dog had just directed me to the right address. I didn't know if dogs really did that, but at the moment I was sure this dog could do it. Oh, shit. I actually said that, out loud, in the car. Something had clicked so hard in my mind, my whole body twitched. I knew this place. I flashed back to the party, a huge kid with red hair is back to me, standing with Robert the fake Jamaican. That was Big Jim Sullivan. This is his house. Big Jim was a year ahead of me in school, 6 inches taller and twice my weight. He got famous around town after a carjacking attempt, which ended with Jim tearing the gun out of the assailant's hand, ripping the skin off the guy's trigger finger in the process, and then beating the man over the head with his own gun. Afterward, Jim visited the guy in the hospital and spent several hours reading Bible verses to him. He once won a fight with Zach Goldstein by chucking him bodily over a guardrail. I had lived in constant fear of the man, and even now I had the urge to flip the dog out of the car window and speed away. You see, Jim had a sister. We called her Cucumber, but I couldn't remember her real name. She was in special ed, a couple of years younger than me. People think she got that nickname because of some sexual thing, but it was a reference to sea cucumbers. They have this defense mechanism where they puke up their guts when faced with a predator, hoping the predator will go for their guts rather than eating them. I should know. I made up the nickname. You see, Jim's sister used to throw up a lot, and I mean a lot, Like twice a week at school she'd wind up vomiting somewhere or on somebody. I don't know what exactly caused it. She had a lot of things wrong with her, but at least she got one of the more clever nicknames out of the deal. My last year in school, after I'd gotten sent off and put into the behavior disorder program, Big Jim heard me using that nickname, and I lived the rest of my school days afraid he would break me into little pieces in the parking lot. The worst part would have been that as I was bleeding and feeling teeth breaking off in my mouth, I would have spent every second of the pummeling knowing I deserved it. So Big Jim was at the party. With Robert? What did that mean? And why was his dog there? Did he bring his dog to every party? Had he gone blind and was Molly his seeing-eye dog? Was it the dog's birthday? I felt like an idiot. Here I was toting the animal all over town, putting myself at grave risk in the process when I could have just left her at the party where her owner was. I scrambled to think of how I would approach him with all this, the soy sauce, and Robert, and his unnaturally smart dog. Wait, driveway's empty. So? Jim probably tied on a good drunk and was sleeping it off at a girlfriend's house. Bullshit. Big Jim doesn't drink and wouldn't leave his kid sister at home alone all night. I got out of the car and motioned for the dog to follow. She didn't. I called to her and patted my thigh, which I've seen other people do with dogs, so I figured it must work. Nothing. I did this for several minutes, the dog not even looking at me now, sniffing around John again. I realized no amount of thigh slapping, not even an all-out blues ham bone, would move this animal. I leaned into the car and started tugging at her collar. She backed off, growling, looking at me with a disdain I didn't think canines were capable of. Come on, damn it, you made me drive here. Through all of this, John didn't stir. I think that was what freaked me out most of all. He was laying there in the uncomfortable bucket seat, twisted and slumped like a crash test dummy, more passed out than asleep. I reached in and grabbed roughly at Molly's collar. I'm going to skip past the next 10 minutes and just say that I wound up carrying Molly up to the house. The plan was to tie her up around back and slip away unnoticed, but as I passed by the front door, it opened. Not all the way, just the few inches allowed by the security chain. I was hit by that jittery caught-in-the-act feeling. I turned, huge dog in my arms, to see the pale, freckled, utterly confused face of Jim's sister. No sign she even recognized me, or maybe she just didn't want to acknowledge where she recognized me from. Hey, weren't you in my special ed class? I quickly propped my chin over the dog's back and spoke. Hey there, I have your dog. The door closed. I stood there for an awkward moment, feeling the odd urge to drop the animal and run. I heard Cucumber's voice from inside shouting, Jim, the guy that stole Molly's here. I sat the dog down and grabbed hold of her collar before she could bolt. The door snapped open again, and I half expected Big Jim to show himself, his Irish copper-topped head appearing a foot and a half above where the girls had been. But it was the sister again saying, He's coming. You better bring me the dog now, or you can have it if you want it. What? The dog. You can have it. That one is worth $125, but you can have it free because it's used. Oh, no, I don't need it. It's yours, right? Jim's, but he doesn't like it either. He's coming. What? Is there something wrong with it? Her eyes flicked quickly from me to the dog and back. Is that fear? Something make her nervous about this dog? You and me both, honey. No, she said, looking at her shoes. Then why'd you pay $125 for it? Have you ever seen a golden retriever puppy? Your brother isn't here, is he? She didn't answer. There's no car here. Doesn't he drive a Jeep or something, big SUV? She looked over, then said, We have a gun in the house. Do you want the dog or not? What? No. Where's Big Jim? Who? Jim, your brother. He just went down the street. He'll be back any second now. Damn it, I'm not going to attack you. Didn't he go to a party last night? Long pause. She said, Maybe. Oh, shit. Look at her. She's scared senseless. Just outside of town, right at the lake? She snapped. You know where he is? No. He never came home? She didn't answer. She wiped at one of her eyes. The dog, I said, Molly. She was at the party. Did he take her there? No. She ran off before that. So the dog followed him to the party? He was there looking for Jim? Who knows? She said, I think Jim's dead. This stopped me.
What?
No. I don't think. She broke into tears, then choked out the words. He won't answer his phone. I think that black guy killed him. She looked right at me and spat out. Were you there? This was an accusation. She wasn't asking if I was at the party. She was asking if I was at the scene of Jim's death. This conversation was spinning out of control.
No, wait. The black guy? Is his name Robert? Got dreadlocks? How do you know him?
She wiped her face with her shirt and said, The police called.
About Jim?
She nodded. They asked if he was here, but they wouldn't say anything else. There was this dreadlocks guy. He came to the house a few times. He was on drugs. Jim works at the shelter for church, and they do counseling and stuff for people like that. Sometimes people come here asking for Jim, asking for, like, rides or loans. The black guy would come here, but Jim wouldn't let him inside. Molly bit him. She ran out and bit his hand while he was talking to Jim.
When was this?
Yesterday. He was right where you are. He was yelling.
Did you hear what he said?
He said a dog bit his hand. I think the guy was some kind of devil worshiper.
That's possible.
I'm closing the door now.
No, wait. What about the...
The door closed. Defeated, I led Molly around to the back of the house, where I found about 10 feet of chain, ending in a broken link, where Molly had presumably snapped it the day before. So the dog had broken her chain, then walked 7 miles to an empty field in a neighboring town, where she somehow knew her master was attending a party? Come on. I tied the chain around her collar and tried to make a knot with it. I climbed back into the car, saw that John hadn't moved even 1 millimeter other than for the steady rise and fall of his ribs. Still alive. That was good, because we had to be at Wally's in a few minutes, and I hadn't been looking forward to opening the store all by myself. If I had known what was about to happen at work, I wouldn't have gone, of course. I would also have taken off my pants. But I didn't have the power of future sight, not at that point, anyway. And so I just sat sulking behind the wheel as we ramped into the parking lot to start the 7 a.m. shift at Wally's Video, where I had worked for 2 years, John, about 2 months. John was always bitching about Wally and how greedy Wally was and how he should have given me a raise by now. He didn't realize that there was no person named Wally in the Wally's organization. That was the name of the DVD-shaped mascot on the store sign. I never had the heart to tell him. I parked and engaged in a discussion with John, transcribed as follows. John, we're at Wally's. You need to get up. John? 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 You need to get up, John. John? I can see you breathing, so I know you ain't dead. You know what that means? It means you gotta get up. John? Come on, we gotta go to work, John. Are you awake? John? John? Wake up, John. John? I finally climbed out of the car and walked around to his door. I reached for the handle and froze. His eyes were wide open, staring blankly through the glass. He was still breathing and blinking, but not really there.
Great. Now what?
If you're thinking call an ambulance, I admit, that's what a smart person would have done. What I did was experiment for a few minutes, poking him and slapping him on the cheek and getting no response. Finally, I found I could lure him through the door by taking his cigarettes and holding them out as bait. He walked like a sleepwalker, slow and shuffling, otherwise unresponsive. Once inside, I planted him in front of the computer behind the counter, reached around, and brought up a spreadsheet to play on the screen in front of him. If anyone came in, he would appear to be sucked into his work on the PC. I looked at the scene, considered, then grabbed his right arm and propped up his chin with it. There. He looked deep in thought now. I put away returns and boxed up Tuesday's new releases so Tina wouldn't have to. I pretty much managed to look normal for the few customers who accidentally missed the Blockbuster 2 blocks down the street. When I got some time to myself after lunch, I flipped through the yellow pages, picked up the phone stuck to the back wall, and scooted up a chair. 2 rings, then.
St. Francis?
Yeah, I said awkwardly.
I need a priest.
Well, this is Father Shelnut. What can I do for you?
Hi. Do you have any experience with, like, demonism? Demonology, I guess? Like possession and hauntings and all that?
Well, I can't say I've personally dealt with anything like that. People that come to me and say they've seen things or say
They feel a kind of unexplained dread in their homes or hear voices. We usually refer them to a counselor, or, you understand, a lot of times medication can...
No, I'm not crazy. I glanced over at John, still catatonic. Other people have...
No, I didn't mean to imply that. Look, why don't you come talk to me? And even if you need to talk to a professional, I got a brother-in-law who's real good. Why don't we do that? Why don't you come in and have a talk with me?
I thought for a moment, rubbed my temple with my free hand. What do you think it's like, Father?
What's what like?
Being crazy? Mentally ill?
Well, they never know they're ill, do they? You can't diagnose yourself with the same organ that has the disease, just like you can't see your own eyeball. So, I suppose you just feel normal, and the rest of the world seems to go crazy around you.
I thought, then said, okay, but let's just suppose I honestly, I mean, in reality, ran into something from beyond the...
Ow!
It was a pinch on my thigh, like a bee sting. I flung myself upright, toppling my chair, letting the handset bang off the wall. I shoved my hand into my pocket, tried to pull out the syringe I had lifted from John's place. I couldn't pull it out. The blasted thing was stuck to my leg. I pulled, felt skin and hair come loose. I hissed through clenched teeth, my eyes watered. I yanked, tearing the syringe free and out of my pants, turning out the white pocket with it. I saw a dime-sized hole in the white fabric, stained red. I saw a drop of the black goo now hanging out of the end of the syringe. Now, I'll try to explain this without cursing, but the black shit that came out from that motherfucker looked like it had grown fucking hair. No, not hair. Fucking spines. Like a cactus. Did I mention that the stuff was moving? Twitching? Like it was trying to worm its way out of its container? I ran into the employee bathroom, holding the syringe at arm's length. I thought about tossing it down the toilet, had visions of the stuff multiplying in the city sewer, and then threw it in the sink instead. I ran out, got John's lighter from his shirt pocket, and came back and held the butane flame to the squirming blob. It burned, curling up and around like an earthworm. The end of the syringe browned and melted along with it, stinking like charred electrical wires. The soy sauce, the black stuff from Planet X or whatever it was, burned in the flame until it became a tiny, hard black crust in the sink. I shook it off the end of the misshapen syringe and washed it down the drain, ran 5 minutes' worth of water after it. The syringe went in the trash. I stumbled back out of the bathroom, shaking as if chilled. I picked up the phone and said, are you still there? Hello?
Yes, son, just calm down, okay? Nothing you're seeing is real.
There was a strange, venomous warmth spreading through my thigh. Look, I said, I appreciate your time, but I'm really starting to think there's nothing you can...
Son, I'm going to be honest with you. We both know you're fucked.
Pause from my end.
Excuse me? Your mom writes on the wall with her own shit. Big changes are coming to Dead World, my son. Waves of maggots over oceans of rot. You'll see it, David. You'll see it with your own eyes. That is a prophecy.
I jerked the phone away from my ear, looked at it like it would bite me. I slowly hung it back on the cradle.
David Wong?
I spun around. A bald black guy in a suit stood at the cashier counter. Yes?
Detective Lawrence Appleton. Please come with me. Your friend, too.
No, I can't leave the shop. John and I are the only ones...
We've already contacted the owner. He's sending someone in to cover for you. You'll lock the door on your way out, please.
Come with me, sir. Chapter 3. Grilling with Morgan Freeman. I was alone in the interview room at the police station. The one-way mirror was to my left. In it, I saw myself slumped in the chair, the disorganized black hair, the beard stubble that had crept onto my pale face like mildew on white porcelain. Man, you need to lose some weight. I had been in there for 30 minutes, or 2 hours, or half a day. If you think time stops in the waiting room at the dentist, you ain't never been alone in an interrogation room at a police station. This is what they do. They throw you in here to stew in the silence, all your guilt and doubts burning a hole in your gut,
so the truth can spill out onto the tile floor. I should have gotten John to a hospital. Hell, I should have called an ambulance as soon as I got off the phone with him this morning. Instead, I fucked around for 12 hours, and for all I know, that black shit from the syringe was eating through his brain that whole time. That ability to see the right choice, but not until several hours have passed since making the wrong one, that's what makes a person a dumbass, folks. Morgan Freeman stepped in and laid a manila folder before me. Thick paper. Photos. A white cop followed him. Something about their manner pissed me off, like they were swooping in on prey. I wasn't the bad guy here. I wasn't the one selling that black shit. But now I get to listen to these douchebags tell me everything I should have done instead of what I did? There was no fucking time for that.
"I want to thank you for coming down, Mr. Wong," he said. "I bet it's been quite a night for you. Been a long night for me, too, as a matter of fact."
"Okay. You know what helps? A warm glass of go fuck yourself."
"Where's John?"
"He's fine. He's talking to another officer just a few rooms from here."
I actually couldn't name the actor the black guy reminded me of, so I stuck with Morgan Freeman. Though now that I looked at him, he bore almost no resemblance. This man was heavier, with round cheeks, a goatee, and a shaved head. I couldn't remember what he said his name was. His white partner had a crew cut with a mustache. Almost a G. Gordon Liddy, a cookie-cutter cop from Central Casting. I couldn't help but think how much cooler he would look if he would just shave his head like his partner. Morgan should say something to him about that. "John is talking?" I asked. "Really?"
"Don't worry, man. Since you're both going to tell the unvarnished truth, you don't got to worry about your stories matching, do you? We're all friendly here. I ain't going to make you piss on a cup, or to lean on you about all that mess that happened your last year in school with that Hitchcock kid."
"Hey, I had nothing to do with—"
No. Don't even bother. That's what I'm saying. I'm not here to accuse you of nothing at all. Just tell me what you did last night."
I had a knee-jerk impulse to lie, but realized at the last second that I hadn't actually done anything illegal. Not as far as I knew. Sounding guilty anyway, I said, "Went to a party up by the lake. I came home just after midnight. I was asleep by 2.
"You sure about that? You sure you didn't go over to the One Ball Inn down on Grand Avenue for a nightcap?"
"What's a nightcap?"
"Your buddies were all there."
"Well, officer, I really only have the one friend." "No. I had to work this morning.
As you know, I went straight home."
I knew I should be talking about the Jamaican, only my knee-jerk impulse to never volunteer anything to the cops was holding me back. That was stupid. Robert Marley should be sitting here, not me. He was the one handing out the black voodoo oil that seemed to have put a crack in the universe. That's got to be a felony, right? I thought about that shit, moving out of the syringe like a worm. Then I thought of that substance being inside John, and shivered.
"You feeling okay?"
I heard myself say, "Uh-huh." As I said it, a strange, jittery energy rose up inside me, radiating from the chest out. The syringe, in my pocket, biting my leg. The spot of blood, moving, inside John, inside me. All of a sudden, everything was too bright, like somebody turned up the saturation on all the colors in the room. Everything came into high focus, a high-def signal. I spotted a moth on the opposite wall and noticed a small tear in one of its wings. I heard a guy talking on his cell and realized he was on the sidewalk outside the building. What the fuck? I looked the detective in the eye. I was startled to find I could see his next question coming before he even spoke it, word for word.
Have you heard the name Nathan Curry? Guy your age. Parents own a body shop here in town.
My heart was hammering. I muttered, "No." "How about Shelby Winder?"
"How about Shelby Winder? Heavy girl, senior at Eastside High, ring a bell?"
"No. Sorry." Clarity lit up my mind like a sunrise. Everything was obvious now. All the walls of the maze turned to glass. I immediately knew 2 things. This list of people had all been at the party last night. And they were all now dead, or heading there. Now how do I know that? How do I know any of this? Magic? You know damn well why. That black shit John took made blood contact with you. Now you're getting high, partner. He asked,
"What about Jennifer Lopez?"
"Oh, yeah, I know her."
"Not the actress now, but—"
"I know. I saw her last night. Is she okay?"
"RKM Gibbs?"
"No, wait, yeah. Big guy, right? Black? I don't know him, but
but he was the only black guy in my high school. I trailed off, studied the detective's face. No, this was not another day at the office for this guy. He's seen things, the kind of things that